Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today kicking off on this Thursday morning, a getting to know you Thursday with the Jaguars offensive coaching staff, at least the new additions of four new guys. And we'll get a chance to talk to all of them after the show today and bring you some of that tomorrow. It looks like we'll have a chance to sit down with Greg Olson when he's done with his other media availabilities sometime around 12:30 today. Bring you that conversation tomorrow. We're hopeful to have Nathaniel, or as Ryan O'Halloran refers to him, Nate Hackett.
I'm going with Nate because the GM refers to him as Nate.
Now, that's fine.
So I'm going Nate.
We'll find out. We'll see what he prefers.
Plus, that's a hell of a lot easier to spell.
Nathaniel Hackett. Well, maybe. I don't have to write it. I just have to say it. And I'm used to saying Nathaniel Hackett. If he tells me differently, we will go accordingly. But he is hopeful. We're hopeful that he can carve out some time to join us live on the program tomorrow. Have you spoken with Hackett yet, Nate or Nathaniel, either
No.
one of them?
No.
I've heard that he puts Gus Bradley to shame in the enthusiasm department.
Yeah, and that's Dave gave me a great quote on that. It says it makes Gus look sedate, which is kind of we're probably not going to see that until they're on the practice field, but
sure.
I think you'll see him as a guy running around a little bit. So, but that'd be cool.
Yeah, all he could do to top Gus is just bring us some breakfast every morning, because Gus makes sure he pops his head in every day and says hello, make sure morale is up with the Jaguars Today crew. And why wouldn't it be? We have a two-hour workday ahead of us, stretching out right now. Fresh back from Phoenix for you. You took the red eye, huh, after the game on Monday?
I did. Got back to the hotel around 10 Mountain, had a 1:30 flight, landed in Miami, flew up to Jacksonville, got in my door at 11:30, and just passed out.
That's not bad. I didn't bother to check the red-eye schedule, because if I was going to stay, I figured I'd come back Monday like I did the last time the Super Bowl was in Arizona. Man, did they jack up the rates for the flights on Monday. And since I wasn't technically going to be working the game, Ryan, I thought I'd best be served by putting my feet up and watching it in the comfort of my own residence.
That I know a lot of people that do that.
Where do you rank it? How many Super Bowls have you been to, personally?
This was number 7.
Okay, where do you rank it, and if there's something above it, give us an example.
This is number 1.
Was it?
From start to finish, just well played. You know, you saw a couple drops, but there wasn't a lot of penalties. Couple missed calls, but I mean, going into the game, the last game in Glendale was number 1. Pat's Giants.
Did you see the Arizona Pittsburgh game in Tampa?
Yes.
To me, that was number 1, and I'd gone to the other Pat's Giants mm-hmm. game, but they were both very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's Arizona Pittsburgh is 3. In I've been fortunate is I've only really covered one dog, which would be last year, Seattle Denver. One blowout.
Yeah, I was at that one too, sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's like, I basically had 3 screens open. I had the main body of the story. I had a Seattle lead and I had a New England lead going. So back and forth I was going. So, but the way it ended with the interception, you sort of were like, it was right in front of us down in that corner. So, as far as the play call goes, you say, okay, you want to run it, but okay, if Pete Carroll says pass, okay, if you're going to run a pass, I hate quick slants in that confined space because there's so much traffic where you can get a deflection. A guy can,
even though there was not much traffic as it worked out, that ball hits him in the shoulder pad and it takes a funny bounce, game over on a fluke.
Yeah. They don't really have a guy. I mean, you would have thrown it to that emerging receiver, Chris Matthews, on a fade.
He emerged over the previous 3 hours.
Emerged.
His entire career emerged.
So that left a lot to be discussed. And then, I think this was just a great moment for Brady. After the pathetic interception in the first quarter, and then the one in the third quarter, and then the comeback.
Did you see the highlights, however you want to deem them, from the parade yesterday?
Yeah.
Very Seattle Seahawk like. I would have expected this from the You Mad Bro crew out there in the Pacific Northwest, but you had Biatch Mode, which LeGarrette Blount was going around. You see the T-shirt that he had with the Marshawn Lynch's number and the Seahawks jerseys. I'm sure that's a popular one right now up in New England.
LeGarrette is a bastion of classiness.
Yes, clearly. And then Edelman was up on the top of a bus or something. I mean, precariously positioned up there as they're rolling through the parade route.
Careful with that concussion, buddy.
Which you know he's got. You know he has.
After all, you just beat St. Louis.
You saw on the sideline when Richard Sherman saw Doug Baldwin catch a touchdown. Darrell Revis was covering him, kind of got picked by the referee, the umpire, whoever it was. And he goes 2-4 to hold up the fingers. 24, that's Revis's number. So they took a picture of the shot where he's got the four fingers in the air, and it's Richard Sherman holding four fingers up, and it says, "How many Super Bowl titles does Tom Brady now have?" And someone's carrying around this poster at the parade. So Edelman, in his drunken concussion haze, leans over and says, allegedly, says, "Give me that placard," and he takes it up top. He's showing it to everybody, and then he punches a photograph of Richard Sherman right in the square in the nose. So, revenge is sweet for the New England Patriots. Today,
Jaguars. It's too bad Richard Sherman's busy having a baby. I'd love to see him respond to something like
that.
But
like the Richard Sherman thing, I mean, he should know better than that. I mean, he usually doesn't do, you know, he says great stuff. He's great quote, but like, you know, holding the 2 and the 4. I mean, it was way too early to start doing that.
Yeah, it was pretty early to start doing that. They were feeling pretty good about their chances at that point in time. And keep in mind, they score that touchdown. Patriots punt on the next possession, and as the clock's ticking and the time is being calculated, I'm thinking in my head, the next time they better get a stop, but the next time they get the ball back, this is pretty much the ball game. Uh-huh. You've got to go down and score. Obviously, they did on back-to-back possessions to take the lead, which they eventually held on to. Coming up today, we'll talk about your conversation with Shad Khan. We each, myself, Brent Martineau, got a chance to spend some time with him in Arizona last week, and I thought some interesting things coming out of those conversations, so we'll get into that. Your thoughts on what you want to hear from the new additions to the coaching staff today. Greg Olsen, Doug Marrone, Nate Hackett, and Kelly Skipper will all meet with the assembled media today. Gus Bradley have, I guess, like an introductory press conference of his own for about 10 or 15 minutes at 11:45 today, and then each of these guys will be available to the print and broadcast media, respectively, throughout the course of the next hour plus after the show today. So we'll bring you a lot of that sound either later on this afternoon on 1010 XL 92.5 FM and certainly tomorrow morning on Jaguars Today. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the way to do it. You want to hop on board and talk a little Jaguar football or anything having to do with the National Football League, you know how to do it. Tweet us today at MD_1010XL. At 1010XL Fat Tony and at Ryan O'Halloran. And the fan feedback spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealership simply asks you, if you could ask one question of the new offense coordinator, Greg Olsen, what would it be? For all you know, that question will get posed to him by me when we sit down with him today after the show for an interview that will air tomorrow. Yes, I want you to do my job for me.
I think a good one would be, did the Raiders draft fourth?
This past year,
yeah.
When they took Khalil Mack, the bust out of Buffalo, who they're comparing now to Lawrence Taylor year.
Justin Tucked, yeah, thanks for that. if Bortles was on the board, would they have drafted him?
In Oakland. That's a very good question. I wonder if he, you know, would
he answer that
in that position, right? Would he answer that? Would he give you an honest answer? It'd be, you know, I wouldn't expect him to throw Derek Carr under the bus either. He played very well for them as a rookie, out in Oakland last year. So,
yeah, you made me ask him more in a roundabout way, but you know, did you have them?
I think that's the first question I'll be asking, and I will take credit for it today when I sit down with Greg Olsen a little bit later on today. All right, you want to get on board, you know how to do it. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. J. Jaguars Today, live from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Happy Thursday to you. Getting to know the Jaguars' new offensive coaches. That's what we will be doing. The time we'll spend immediately after the show today will be dedicated to that. You'll get to hear from some of those guys, I'm sure, coming up later on this afternoon on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Our plan is to carry at least the Gus Bradley portion of the press conference today live at around 11:45 here on 1010XL, cutting into the last few minutes of Jaguars Today, but it is obviously very Jaguar topical, so we'll bring you that coming up a little bit later on. I assume Gus will discuss, you know, the thought process behind hiring these guys and what these additions mean now that he feels the coaching staff changes are complete. You know, where do they go from here kind of thing. Maybe a little reflection on the Senior Bowl, that kind of stuff. Depends on what kind of questions you get.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, one of my objectives is to look a little bit back toward Mobile and look a little bit ahead towards the Combine, which in 2 weeks they'll be in Indy.
Right.
So, you know, get some insight into that. But also, I mean, he talked about Marone, he talked about Olsen when he was in Mobile. Well, now it's your, you know, what you're feeling on Hackett, a coordinator coming back to be a quarterback coach. So I think there's a couple different directions that we need to go since he'll be sitting there.
It is interesting to me that they want to keep Frank Selfo on because of his relationship with Blake Bortles, but yet not as his primary coach. I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. There's a lot of cooks starting to crowd into this kitchen over here. And, you know, what will that mean for Frank Selfo on a day-to-day basis and his impact on Blake Bortles?
Yeah, I mean, is it – I mean, under Jed's system, they divided red zone protections, run game, third down. How does Greg Olsen do that? Does Frank Selfo take one of those responsibilities away from a position coach that will leave a position coach to spend more time with his players? So – delegation of duties is what I want to find out. And let's see if they even have decided that yet.
And that's one of the things that at least we'll explore today when we talk to these guys. 641-1010 if you want to get on board. Today's question of the day, if you could ask one thing of the new offensive coordinator, what would it be? I'm sure there's plenty of snarky replies. Those ones probably not going to get actually asked to Greg Olsen. But you're certainly welcome to share the good, the bad, and the ugly with us on that score. Let's get a couple of calls in, and then we'll get into your recollections of your conversation and what stood out to you with Shad Khan last week in Phoenix, Ryan. Let's go to Jim to lead us off today at 641-1010. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Great.
Good.
I think the first thing I would ask Greg would be, there's going to be so much pressure on him. I would ask him if he plans on flying out to meet with Justin Blackmon while he's got a little bit of downtime here. I mean, there's so much pressure on this offense. I think if you look at a guy who won the Biletnikoff Award, not once, but twice in college, you've got to get him back on this roster.
Can we start off with a worse call?
What is wrong with that call?
First of all, he's not even eligible to meet with the player.
That I get, but from a fan standpoint, I don't think they necessarily all know the ins and outs of what's allowable
of contact. Then we haven't been doing our job.
Well,
because I think
we've
been pretty upfront about what they can and can't
that's
do.
That's fine, but not everybody follows the minutia of that stuff day in, day out to the degree that we do. The information is out there, yes. But I think the larger question is that kind of follows what Jim's point is, you know, what – how enthusiastic would you be about getting Justin Blackmon back? Could you envision him being part of your plans? This, that, and the other. I know Shad Khan said he was very optimistic about his return. You don't think, I mean, I don't know what Greg Olsen can say about Justin Blackmon, but I understand the fans' perspective that they're curious because they feel like, you know, we haven't heard any setbacks recently. That doesn't mean everything's going along swimmingly. He hasn't been approved to get back in the league yet, but they're intrigued by the talent that he brings to the table. I know you're not a believer in that talent to the degree that some others are, but I think it's understandable why he wants to follow that line of questioning.
Well, I was hoping that question would be going, does he plan on flying to California and meeting Blake Bortles? Well, he's not allowed to do that either. So
you would have been upset with that one too.
Because, no, I wouldn't have. Why?
Because we wouldn't have done a good enough job explaining he can't talk with Blake Bortles.
Because Blake Bortles is an eligible player in good standing with the National Football League.
Okay, but I get that. But I mean, do you not understand why? I mean, your feelings about Justin Blackmon being able to help this team aside.
By the way, I think that call was rigged.
I don't believe it was. I mean, this guy just called in.
Yes.
I thought that was very matter of fact question about it, man. I mean, you know, to me, it's very understandable.
Let's spin it forward here a little bit.
Okay.
If this guy comes off a 2-year absence, and I would be absolutely stunned and shocked if he becomes even a somewhat productive player here. You wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
Wow.
Me and pretty much the world.
Well, you would be alone. You would be alone in this building.
Who thinks he could be a productive player?
It would be stunning to people in this building if he came back and was productive.
If he actually comes back, that he'll be stunning that he could come back.
No, it wouldn't be that he would be reinstated because they expect that eventually.
So you're telling me nobody in this building thinks Justin Blackmon can come back and be a productive player?
I think the majority would be surprised if he becomes a vital part of this offense.
Wow. I don't know if you're speaking strictly to coaching staff, front office. I can't, you know, I'm not going to ask you to necessarily put names on that.
It's not me. I don't count.
I get it, but, you know, Jeff Logman, is he part of this building? I mean,
no.
He's not.
No.
Okay. He works out of the building. So I guess you're talking about front office types, what have you. I don't know what you're, you're the one who said people, in this building,
we
I'd be alone.
I'm not going
to
give you names.
I'm not asking you to give up your source here.
People who have a paycheck with Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay. I think Logman would qualify for that, but we can agree to disagree on that. No, I wouldn't be stunned if he came back and helped us. I'm not saying he'd be a Pro Bowler immediately. The guy's only 25 years old.
That's the difference between you and the fans, though. Is they think he's coming back to be a 100-catch guy.
I think ultimately, eventually, maybe he could be.
But
I mean, look, do you think that people in this building, the same people that question whether or not he can make that kind of impact, think he doesn't have the talent to do that, or they think the layoff, the time away, is the thing that's going to...
That's the big thing, and that's the track record, and that's where I base my opinion on. There really isn't, at least recently, a guy who sat out this long, who came back and was a starter. I mean, you look at Burris a little bit. Was he ever the same? You know, he was more established when he got suspended, but the odds are stacked against him.
A lot different stage of his career, though, than Plexico Burress was mm-hmm. at that
point. We look
point
at a guy like Tanard Jackson, which is the most recent example, as a safety, was suspended multiple times and just couldn't do it.
How long did Chris Carter go without playing football?
I don't think it wasn't as long as this. But
I don't know. I'm seriously asking the question. I'm not trying to use him as an example. I'm just asking the question because clearly he got released from Philadelphia.
Well, then he got picked up by Minnesota the next day.
Right, but did he play? Would he stay on an active roster immediately? Maybe he did. I don't know. Maybe he didn't miss any window of time.
He did not miss a game from Philadelphia to Minnesota because he played every game in 1990 and he played every game in 89.
We've seen plenty of guys miss a year, right, due to injury and overcome that. Justin Blackmon, as far as we know, is healthy. You know, I know it's been a while, but I do believe he can come back eventually and help this team if he keeps his life in order. I think that's the greater hurdle to me, but we'll see. Thank you for Jim pushing one of the hot buttons.
See, I was in a good mood when I came in here. Now we got to talk about this crap over and over
again. Why is this crap? I don't understand why it's crap.
Because nothing's happened. He's not reinstated. So
what? You know what? Let's not talk about the draft. It hasn't happened.
Let's talk about the draft.
Let's not talk about free agency. It hasn't happened. What's the point? We don't know who they're going to sign. Let's talk about it when they're signed. I mean, same thing. We talk about things that may or may not happen all the time.
We know those are going to happen. It seems like, we're just talking in circles here, and I end up being a pinata because
we don't know who they're going to draft. So why should we sit here and say, you know, how would Randy Gregory fit in this scheme? Would they might not even draft him? What's the point? We're wasting our breath.
I wouldn't draft him, but
why would you even bring that up?
because I know the draft's going to happen.
All right. You don't think at some point that Justin Blackman's going to apply for reinstatement? The owner last week himself said he is, I'm paraphrasing, I don't know the exact phrase, very enthusiastic, very hopeful. So what were the words he used? You talked to him, I'm sure, about this very subject.
Yeah, optimistic or something.
Optimistic, right. Very optimistic. When the owner says that, why shouldn't the fans be optimistic about it? Doesn't that make sense?
They can do whatever they want. I just...
Did you express to Shad that this is ridiculous? How can you be optimistic about this?
Oh,
this
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
And what did he say?
Because my follow-up was, I said, and it's the same thing I asked Dave Caldwell the day after the season. My big thing with him is when he gets back into Jacksonville, will it enter his mind, okay, it didn't work here the first time, and will that impact him? I asked Shad, I said, so you have no qualms about bringing somebody like that who could bring some baggage back into a locker room with very young receivers who are impressionable? He said, they all know what's happened, which to me was skirting the answer. But so.
All right, well, that's fine. I mean, obviously you feel that way. Others feel a different way. I think it's best to move on at this moment. And we go to Tony up next here on Jaguars Today. What's up, Tony? How are you?
Ask a good question, Tony.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. If I could ask our Coach Olsen a question, it would be that if you look at the best quarterbacks in the last couple of years, not all of them, but they all seem to have a really good pass-catching tight end. Have you had time to evaluate the best options for a tight end either through the draft or free agency? And one more thing, congratulations to Brian Stork for winning the national championship and then a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you know, all he needs is a personality transplant and he'll have hit the trifecta with that guy. But other than that,
boy, he is a tough nut to crack.
Boy, you think Ryan O'Halloran is a tough nut?
Take another run at him after the game?
No. I had my first experience with him at Florida State Auburn that week, and I was like,
same way?
Yes. And because he wasn't ruined by the Patriot way.
Okay.
He was that way.
That's what I thought it might have. I thought it might have been a reaction to Deflategate, you know, and all the coverage, and then no one else acted like that.
I mean, I went up to him and I knew it was going to be tough, but I had to write a story up, so I was going to give him like four questions before I gave up, and I gave him a softball right at the start. I said, hey, how much did Rick Trickett, the FSU legendary O-line coach, how much did he influence you in your career? A lot. How so? Everything.
What right.
Specifically, taught me toughness. Good to see you.
Right. That's kind of how it was. What's the most daunting aspect of the Seattle front seven? They're all good.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And you know what? That's your prerogative. Whatever. It's my prerogative not to like your personality.
So the first part is first part of his question about the tight end is I think that's a crucial part for a young quarterback. They have to make a decision on Mercedes Lewis. Greg Olsen was here 2 years ago when Mercedes was here, so there's some familiarity there. So I think that's definitely an issue either in-house or out-of-house they have to address and to help this offense move along.
All right, we got to take a quick timeout. If you want to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. You got all the Twitter handles as well. Thursday on Jaguars Today continues in a moment here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, glad you're along with us. I'm glad you're along. Tony's probably glad you're along,
yeah.
Right, Tony? Tyler loves
come
the,
on
the
along.
Audience out there. Ryan may or may not be glad you're along with us. Some of you. And I'm not going to speak for Ryan. He does a good job speaking for himself. I will say this. The people on Twitter that tell Ryan O'Halloran to get on board, have some faith. It's not your job to have faith. You know, I respect the fact that you have your own opinions. I truly do. I don't agree with this particular opinion, okay? I think it goes to the heart of, and I don't want to turn this into a whole nother Justin Blackman show. We've hashed this out before. I didn't set that call. The guy said that's what he wanted to ask Greg Olsen. Not my fault.
Well, you at least laughed at the part when I said, is that rigged?
I know, because I know what you're thinking. No, it is funny. You know how I love to every time, yeah, you do have some strong opinions about certain subjects, and sometimes when I disagree with you, such as the Khalil Mack one, I've been known to bring that up on occasion when I feel like my case is being strengthened. I have fun with that. That's all cool.
You hadn't brought that one up in a while, though.
No, but today, because his name popped up.
Well, Justin Tuck is...
Right, and Justin Tuck compared him to LT and all that. but he, apparently, whatever. That aside, you know, I don't think there should be an expectation that you should have faith in anything. Your job is not to work for the team. My job is not to work for the team. Okay. I would consider myself more of a fan of the Jags than you are. I'm not a quote unquote Jaguar fan in the sense that if they win the Super Bowl, I'm going to cover myself in Jag swag and feel like I've earned it. You know what I mean? I think there are true fans out there that live and die with. I'm a fan in the sense that, I like these guys. I like working the building. It's more fun when they win, right? I'm pragmatic as well. The more success they have, the better it is, I think, for our industry. We've had plenty of years of terrible seasons, right? Let's try it the other way. I remember how good it was to cover this team in 2007.
Oh, yeah.
And years well beyond that. But I don't think you wish the team ill. This is how you feel about this particular topic. That's how you're going to state it. I don't think it's your job to have faith in Justin Blackman or the team or anything else. It's your job to report it as you see it. And I think you do that. So that's just my point of view on it. You don't need me standing up for you, but I'm receiving all the same flood of tweets that you are right now. And
not a joke.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if I got that one, actually. Maybe that was...
No, you did.
Oh, did I get that one? All right. The few of them called you names. Well, you just said that was the worst caller. I don't know if that's a name. That was just more of a critique.
Yeah, you were angry with that caller. Look, 2 years is 2 years, and I get it. It's not going to be easy for anybody to come back after 2 years and be what they would have been if they hadn't missed 2 years. What you got to, I think a lot of Jaguars fans out there are hoping for a lot more than, I agree with you, Ryan, they're probably going to get in the end from Justin Blackman. There's a lot of hope out there for him. I think he can come back and be a pretty good player for this team. That doesn't mean he can come back and be the guy I thought he was going to be 3 years ago. I'm not sure he can be that.
Well, I think that's where, and speaking seriously, not that I wasn't before, but the disconnect here is, for every fan that wants him back and wants him back in a Jaguar uniform, let's say you do get that. Well, what happens if he has three catches in the first six games because he's fallen behind the depth chart and he's taking time to get back? Are all these same guys going to be calling into your show going, you know, why aren't they giving the ball more? He's a bust.
Guess what? Probably.
So, probably.
But you know what?
Save your breath until
it
happens.
Not every fan needs to live on the razor's edge of logic all the time either, right? I mean, here is my hypocrisy ring its ugly head, because the minute you make an illogical argument to me, I'm going to try to dismiss
off
you.
The illogical argument.
But I do get the nature of fanhood is full of, for some people, it's full of optimism. For some people, some teams, it's full of pessimism because they've been beaten down over the years, and that's what they've come to expect. Whatever. That's part of being a fan. And I don't think he steps in the door and he's a 110 catch guy, but if Justin Blackman could eventually become part of a core of four guys, let's say with the three rookies from last year, if he got his feet wet this year, kind of got back up to speed, and then for 2016 and beyond, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I think he could get back to being an 80 catch
40?
Guy. What's that?
Could he be 40?
A 40 catch guy?
Yeah.
Oh, certainly. I think he could be that.
Yeah.
I think he could eventually be an 80 catch guy. I don't think his game relied as much on, you know, pure speed, which I think if you're not constantly keeping that sharp, you can lose that aspect of the game. I don't want to get it just caught up on that side of the conversation that we're having right now. All right. Let's get to what Shad Khan had to say, other than what he had to say about Justin Blackman last week when you talked him out in Phoenix. One thing you told me that stood out to you was he wanted more creativity on offense.
Yeah, he brought that up, and you know, and he said the first time without me really. I mean, I went in there. I was not going to ask him any questions about scheme because that's not his house. But he said, but he brought it up in terms of they wanted to be, you know, more creativity. So I followed up. I said, what does that mean for you? He goes, well, we had some on some trick plays. Well, that sort of like maybe contradicts some of the thought out there that Jed's offense was too vast. I disagree with that. So, or do they want to boil it down to, you know, how do you be creative if you feel you need to boil it down a little bit?
To simplify things.
Yeah, so that was interesting to me. And he added that, and I think the other has been talked about on this air, not going to give Gus Bradley a mandate. That doesn't surprise me, because even if he went in and said, you got to win seven games, he's not going to tell us he told him that. So that's, you know, neither here nor there. But, as far as other stuff, he's in favor of playoff expansion, which he should be, because that would impact a team like this.
Certainly it would.
I mean, if you're any owner, if you're against playoff expansion, you're probably not thinking right. Even if you're the Patriots and stuff, because the Patriots went 11-5 when Brady got hurt and they didn't make the playoffs. So everybody should be in favor of that. So,
look, every owner's going to be in favor of it because it means more money on the bottom line. That's the bottom line of the whole thing.
Yeah, and more football to me is good.
Now, I get in the sense, though, that the playoff expansion is going to be tabled for another year.
He was optimistic that there he sounded confident there would be a vote, and he was optimistic that it would pass.
This year, this offseason.
Like next month.
To implement for the next postseason.
Yes.
Which would theoretically then be seven teams in each conference, one team gets a bye, the other six play off, and then whether you reseed or not, you would have one versus whatever, and then one versus four, two versus three, however you look at it.
I would assume they reseed, right? Because they do now.
Yeah, I'm sure they. Yeah. I mean, if that's the way, you would expect that to be the case. Mm-hmm. But I think the bigger question is, does it get to that point? I think from a fan of just the game, I think you got to be careful about oversaturation. I mean, I remember growing up at a time when the NHL had 21 teams and 16 of them were in the postseason. It truly did make the regular season practically meaningless.
Yeah, and I think that, and now when people on ESPN say that, well, the NBA is the same way. So, because that's their major revenue generator. I think if you add one more team, as long as you have one team or two, one team each conference that gets a bye, that still values finishing at the top of your conference.
Yeah, it absolutely values it.
Look at this year.
Right. And look, I do think one thing that's happened with more division games being played in the final few weeks of the season and the way things have been set up, you've had a lot more teams stay mathematically viable for the postseason. You add one more opening that only figures to make sense that some of those teams that got eliminated the prior week are still going to be alive an extra week. So it keeps more fan bases engaged, at least with the hope that the postseason is coming their way.
One more thing, Shad, when I asked about Doug Marrone, he goes, I've seen in this business and in my life, you want people around you for support who are experienced. In this case, Gus can talk to Doug about stuff. The final decision maker is Gus, but a lot of times discussion drives a decision to a logical conclusion. That plays into the theory we probably talked about on here, is they just needed some more experience on that offensive side. Some guys who been coordinators, been around the league, the league a couple times around the block, just to get some more ideas out there, and I think that will help.
Yeah, it's funny because the reaction has been mixed on this. I don't think it's necessarily a factor in Gus's decision making. At least my guess, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that when he hires Doug Marrone, some people thought, well, you know, is this, did he need to consider putting a guy with head coaching experience in the organization in case he gets off to a slow start? You've got an automatic guy to turn to.
My red flag.
Right. But I don't think Gus thinks like that. That's my guess. And we've also had a guy call in yesterday or tweet in yesterday who said, that this is Gus realizing he's in over his head. He can't do it on his own. He needs another head coach on the staff. And to me, it's neither one of those things.
Well, if it was the second point, then he would have brought in somebody on defense, because that's where he's acknowledged from the start that defense is his expertise.
Right.
I mean, I just think, the Marrone thing is the way he left. To me, that was just an interesting hire, because is he a guy who's going to be angling toward a job? Does he fall in line? The Olsen thing is, I figured it wasn't going to be well received, but he's been a lot of places, and, they figure he can help Blake.
All right. Here's Ryan O'Halloran along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today. Coming up this date in football history with a big Jaguar piece of anniversary news for you there, as well as the Honda drive around the NFL. Your call's welcome. continued at 641-1010. And yeah, you know all the Twitter handles, MD_1010XL, Ryan O'Halloran at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Back with this date in football history next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
The state in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. It was on this day in 1998 when author Tom Clancy confirmed at the time that he had signed an agreement to purchase the Minnesota Vikings for slightly more than $200 million, which would have been an NFL franchise record. Ryan, we're talking about that bid kind of fell apart. Tom Clancy wasn't as liquid, maybe, as he needed to be. I forget the exact details of that at the time.
I'll try to look that up. I think there might have been a divorce involved.
Was there? Well, he had half of what he thought he had, likely. Mini pop quiz within this state in football history. Can you guys tell me, in the book The Sum of All Fears, which two teams met for the Super Bowl that was targeted for a nuclear strike, and in what city was the game supposed to be played? Come on, what you got? One of them should be easy.
Minnesota.
Minnesota Vikings is one of them.
Location, Washington, D.C.
Location was actually Denver. They played the game in Denver, and I believe it was San Diego versus Minnesota was the matchup in the fictional Super Bowl at the time, which, by the way, was written in 1991, and it was Palestinian terrorists, right, who were at the focal point of that. When they made the movie at the time, they didn't think the Palestinians could pull off something like this, so they switched it to neo-Nazi East German radicals. Irony, yes.
Yeah, I vaguely remember the movie.
Yeah, the movie was the clear present danger to me was almost a perfect adaptation of a novel to the screen, and that was, I thought, maybe Tom Clancy's best movie, or best movie based on one of his works.
Here's the Clancy thing, is there were concerns whether he had enough money, cash. And then the article says, the real problem was in the courtroom. Midst of a divorce, so the ex-wife wanted 50% of the Jack Ryan Enterprises, and also 50% of the future Jack Ryan. So she's still getting a piece of every book that's sold.
That's crazy. I don't understand how you can get 50% of the future. It hasn't been here. Stick it out for the long haul, lady. All right. Also in the state, 1942, Roger Staubach was born. Craig Morton born 1 year later. I believe they were teammates at one point. Also competitors in one of those 1970 Super Bowls going head-to-head. And 2 years ago today, the Jacksonville Jaguars unveiled the new logo.
Woo!
I like the new logo pretty much from the jump. You know what I mean? I don't like the helmets. I still think the helmets are unfinished, maybe the best way of putting it. But I think the logo is pretty badass, and it is 2 years old as of today. This state in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. Whether it's a family dentist or cosmetic work you need done, 620-9225. The number, the Somnamed Custom Fit Snore Guard, a very popular item there as well. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the Cleveland Browns have already had a tough week. Their star wide receiver, Josh Gordon, has been suspended by the NFL again. Their first round quarterback, Johnny Manziel, has checked himself into rehab. Now they have TexGate. Now the Browns could be facing a league fine and or a forfeited draft pick after an NFL investigation into whether or not the team's GM, Ray Farmer, was sending texts to the team's sidelines during games. Farmer could be facing a suspension as well. LaTroy Guyon?
I think it's Guyon.
Guyon, the former Florida State Seminole and current Green Bay Packers player, was arrested in Stark last night. When police searched his vehicle, they found 357 grams of marijuana, that's nearly a pound, as well as over $190,000 in cash.
That's nearly 200 grand.
That's a lot. According to the police report, he was extremely uncooperative and hostile and kept coming toward the vehicle several times saying, "Hey, man, my money is in there. Don't let him take my money," which is an understandable sentiment. He also had a 9mm handgun in the car that he is reportedly registered to carry in Minnesota. A source said that the money came from cash paychecks from the Packers and that LaTroy was in the process of moving back to Stark during the offseason. Another side note, Marshawn Lynch, no fines for his antics at the Super Bowl. The NFL has said
new
that
era
he
made the cap, right?
Yeah. They said that he met his requirements for meeting with the media and that the cap was an NFL-sanctioned hat.
Right. New Era made it in team colors.
Yep.
And it wasn't just like he went out and got his own. I don't know if Beast Mode is even a brand that he's branded. You know, well, Garrett Blunt doesn't think that's the one that's going to stick. If you saw, and that, well, Garrett Blunt, here's the thing. You want to go after him and call him Biatch Mode? Go after him.
Own it.
Don't come back the very next day and say, about that shirt, man, I have nothing but 100% respect for Marshawn Lynch and the way he plays the game. Then why are you hanging on to and flashing that shirt to the crowd in New England? Obviously, you don't have 100% respect to him. Oh, it must be a special day. Dan Hicken just walked by the Jaguars Today studios. Must be big goings-on down here at Everbank Field. Seriously, that bugs me more about LeGarrette Blount than, you know, just about anything he's done. And that's a laundry list of things. You know, just... God, 24 hours haven't passed, and you're backtracking on that whole thing. You know?
By the way, Richard Sherman and his girlfriend had their baby today as well. Sherman, kind of funny on Twitter about it, he said, "My son knows how to make an entrance, born on 2/5/15. So that's obviously the jersey Richard Sherman wears.
Oh, I just got that.
Yeah. 2/5.
He says with a mouthful of pepperoni pizza, Papa's in the house. Where did that come from, by the way? I know who brought it in. Tad Dickman brought it in. But
well, before the press conference, the pizza for the assembled Jacksonville Media Luminaries.
Oh, that was going on
so
down
I said,
there.
So I said, do you make another delivery?
See? Now, are you allowed? Is this some kind of payola thing going on? Is this allowable under the strict terms of your employment deal with the Florida Times Union?
Ain't cheating, he ain't trying.
All right, just wanted to see if Ryan O'Halloran was going to.
There are certain standards that we've had to turn down. And I could probably say this is when they debuted the new uniforms, which would be 2 years ago. Nike said we'll fly all the media up there for a demonstration how it was made, how it was designed, and we can't go on
Nike's dime.
We couldn't accept that.
Right.
I bet
I could have.
Yes, you could have.
Yes.
I think you could have.
I mean, whatever.
Well, especially now you're broadcast home with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, yeah, but I'm not. I don't work. I don't draw a single penny directly from the Jacksonville Jaguars.
But you could sell. But it could be if you needed to justify it. You could say, hey, you are, you know, part of the.
Or I could just say I'm unscrupulous. Which, I mean, let's get down to the facts of the matter. Honestly, it's not like I have any love loss for Nike. And if they want to fly me up there to check out the new uniforms, I would have done it. Doesn't mean I would turn around and praise Nike, but obviously that is the reason for the separation of church and state, so to speak, as far as that kind of stuff goes. So you're allowed to accept lunch. From the team that you're covering.
Yes.
That falls within your purview. All right. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board today. What do you know about Kelly Skipper? I know he's on Jaguars.com live yesterday. And obviously the least heralded because he's not, you know, you got a former head coach, you got a new offensive coordinator, was an offensive coordinator going to work directly with your QB, and then you've got Kelly Skipper who's going to work with the running backs.
Couple things. He worked for, I think, 5 head coaches in Oakland. So obviously he is he does his job. And talking to you gotta have to help. I'm drawing a blank on the name. The Raiders running back from UCF, Bryant.
Oh, Latavius Murray.
Yeah, Latavius Murray.
Yeah.
There we go. I talked to him in Phoenix. And he said one of the things that Skipper does is he pounds home the fundamentals every day in terms of the, you know, protection, pass catching. Pick the right hole, et cetera. I think that's what this group needs, really in terms of protection. And that's one thing I also heard is he really worked in sync with Greg Olsen in terms of blitz pickups. So that will be an interesting thing about Kelly is that, you know, just brothers running back at Florida, came with Smacko in Colorado State, and their dad, Jim, has been the running backs coach in Carolina forever. So a lot of bloodlines there.
Yeah, had it not been – now, obviously, he – you know, Greg Olsen has a good knowledge of – Kelly Skipper and what he brings to the table, but you wonder if it was protection. You know, we talked to Latavius Murray out in Phoenix last week because they're trying to go that veteran route stubbornly for the first part of the year, and much like here, you got all of a sudden Denard Robinson caught fire for about a month. Latavius Murray gets inserted against Kansas City and has that huge touchdown run. He has four carries for 112 yards. I think he pulled a hamstring, missed the next week, but then from that point on, basically changed the whole dynamic, the fresh legs that he brought to the table. So you wonder, which is the case often with young running backs, protecting your quarterback is one of the things that will keep you from the field, or the lack of protection you provide to your quarterback, blitz pickup, and all that kind of stuff.
And that's one thing Maurice has always been able to do.
He's been outstanding.
So,
you know, I mean, but one of the best in the league as far as that goes. And but even last year, I mean, Maurice wasn't seeing the field. It was pretty much Darren McFadden and no success, a little bit of Maurice Jones-Drew, and it was, you just kept wondering. You keep banging your head against the wall. Why did it take so long to get Latavius Murray on the field? That you often have to look for those kind of other reasons. You got a rookie mm-hmm. quarterback in there. He's trying to keep his head above water. Let's not get him killed.
Well, and you know, here in Jacksonville, it prevented Storm Johnson from probably getting on the
Absolutely.
Field. Absolutely. I mean, he blew some stuff protection wise in the preseason. And
what do you think about him just going forward? Does he have a shot, or you know, just kind of a guy?
Definitely a guy. I think it's going to be an uphill climb here in the Nick, that 53, because you figure they're going to draft a running back. We'll be able to debate that ad nauseum in terms of what round is best, but let's say they draft one in rounds 2 through 5. Well, he's going to get a leg up over Storm Johnson.
Right, it's a 7th-round pick, so, and you got to figure they like Todman. They Dave Caldwell's already expressed they're happy to bring Toby Gerhardt back. He's affordable, even in a third down role, mm-hmm. you know, if it comes to that. And I certainly don't think they're cutting loose Denard Robinson.
Sure.
So
now you just simply get into a numbers game with Storm.
Right.
So
yeah, I don't think you go any deeper than 4 tailbacks, because usually you talk about typically 5 when you throw the fullbacks in mm-hmm. at that point in time. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. By the way, caller wanted to know if you did not go on the Nike trip because the player modeling the Jaguar uniform 2 years ago was none other than, and we'll leave it at that. 641-1010 if you want to get on board.
A lot of player modeling.
641-1010 or if you want to tweet us. Coming up in about 30 minutes, just about 32 minutes from now, actually, Gus Bradley will open up with some remarks introducing Greg Olson, Doug Marrone, Nathaniel Hackett, and Kelly Skipper to the assembled media. We'll all get a chance to talk to those guys. You'll hear some of that coming up later today on 1010XL. You'll hear Gus's comments live in about 30 minutes or so here on 1010XL. And then tomorrow morning, if everything goes according to plan, we'll have our sit-down with new offensive coordinator Greg Olson and possibly a live chat with Nathaniel Hackett, the new Jaguar quarterbacks coach as well. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, coming down kind of the home stretch here, Jaguars Today. We'll go to just about our normal time. I believe Gus is going to be at the podium at around 11:50 this morning. So as we're going off, we'll bring you some of the live opening remarks of Gus Bradley as he's getting set to talk about where things stand at this stage of the offseason. Combine just a few weeks away. Coaching staff now completed. And the boys of XL Primetime will take you out on the other side and for the next 3 hours and be listening this afternoon. I know myself, Tony, Jessica Blaylock, maybe among others. I know Dan Hicken will be down at the press conferences today.
Royalty of Jacksonville.
No question. That's the thing. I mean, that may be in all the times we've done this show, Tony, the first time I've seen Dan walk by our particular bay window.
I think it may be.
In the 10 to noon window. Not that Dan's not one of the hardest working men in the business. He just probably has his own private entrance most of the time. He was hanging out with some of the other riffraff from CBS 47 and Fox 30. Don't have quite the stature that he holds down. We got a call on the line from John the Baptist, wants to talk about Camp Blake. So let's do that. Hi, John. How are you this morning?
Hey, what's going on, fella?
What's up, man?
Yeah, so I was calling to see if you guys might know the wide receiver who was on the practice squad, Tommy Streeter. I just want to know, is he going to the Camp Bortles that he's having over there on the West Coast?
I would certainly hope so. Blake indicated to us, Ryan, last week that everyone was on board.
If you're under contract, you're invited. Yeah. So.
And I would think it would be wise, as not too many guys miss those voluntary mini camps.
Well, I asked him about, is this one of those involuntary, voluntary things, and he answer with a story about George O'Leary when he was at Central Florida. He's like, you know, we always had optional weightlifting days on Sundays. I don't think anyone ever missed
it,
a
like
Sunday.
9 years or whatever it was. Yeah. He said no one's missed one of O'Leary's optional deals.
Voluntary.
Yeah, because I asked him. I said, you know, who all is invited? He goes, anybody who runs a route.
Right. So that's backs, yeah, tight end, the whole lot of them. Yeah, you know,
especially if he's picking up part of the freight, it's the who of you to go out.
What part of the freight do you think is he picking up? That like housing? Or?
I think he's going to help out. Some
like
of those guys.
The young guy, like the young undrafted types, which would be so. Nice. Yeah. It's a good thing. I mean, look, all kidding aside, I'm not trying to be corny about Blake Bortles. I said it.
I love it.
Hicken at the top of the show. He's got to play well. Yeah. But all the other stuff, you love what he brings to the table in terms of, you know, the potential for leadership. It's tough to be a leader, I think, when your team isn't winning. You can still exhibit leadership qualities. But he's going to have to back it up with better play this year to – you know, continue to grow in that aspect. This is a great step. And Tommy Streeter's an intriguing guy just based on the size, you know, size, speed, measurable kind of stuff. We're talking off the air here about Charles Johnson, who we got to meet last year, Tony. And you always heard whispers about this guy, you know, doing something in a mini camp or whatever. He had great size.
Yeah.
Could never stay healthy. Couldn't get on the field. And had a chance in Green Bay, and you know how good they are at identifying young receiver talent. Had a chance in Cleveland, and then finally got his shot in Minnesota, and it clicked. So who knows? With the depth chart that they have, Ryan, I know they've got a lot invested in Lee and Robinson, but all you've got are 3 second-year players that really are clear cut in front of everybody next year, going into what we have under contract right now.
Yeah, and the thing with Streeter is okay, why has he been with 4 teams? What's missing? You know, what haven't they been able to tap into? So, I mean, it's obviously a long shot to make the roster.
Oh, sure.
See if he does anything in camp.
But you know what? We see guys like Malcolm Butler make the game-saving interception, you know? And here's a guy who was undrafted. Was one team showed interest in him, apparently, and that was the New England Patriots, and it worked out. So, you know, we're not saying Tommy Streeter is going to come in and revolutionize the wide receiver core, but right now they need all the help they can get prior to free agency. And we'll see how that changes the dynamic of this depth chart, too. Just what are your thoughts, though, overall? I know you said you like it, the idea of Blake Bortles holding a passing camp out in California. I think you're seeing more and more of that around the league, and certainly the best quarterbacks have been doing it for years.
Yeah, and the more reps you get with those guys, and I'm sure there'll be a wink-wink, a little bit of a route tree sent to them. So
the route tree is kind of the route tree.
The route,
right, the
concepts, I guess, route concepts or some alignments and stuff. So, you know, I always like it when they somebody shows the initiative that has some extra effort, and you know it can only help, because you never know, like once you get in the OTAs, you never know when somebody will miss a week or two with a hamstring.
Sure.
You know, like last year.
Or the whole summer.
Yeah. So, you know, if you can build a little bit of that foundation in February, you can maybe pick things up a little bit faster in April and May.
Who does this ultimately become most important for? I would vote Marquise Lee, probably.
I think so, because he's probably, if you looked at the 3 receivers, he's probably had the fewest reps with Blake. Hearns is first, Robinson probably second. So I think it's important for Marquise to sort of, can you know, keep sustain that momentum he probably picked up the last 6 weeks of the season, and then going into the offseason.
By the
not just a reps thing, but a chemistry thing.
Right.
I mean, Blake and Robinson obviously are already on the same page. He was kind of a third down blanket. We talk about needing a tight end. Robinson basically filled that role on third down when he was healthy enough to be on the field last year. And while they started developing something in the last month of the season or so, it never felt the same way between Blake and Marquise that it did between Blake and Allen.
I always felt like most of Marquise's damage was done on, you know, quick 1 or 3 step drops, get the ball in his hands, and let him make plays, which doesn't require a whole lot of timing to get it done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of vertical stuff.
Right, which is interesting too, because I mean, Shad Khan himself said he wants to see more creativity in the offense, but one of the most common complaints we heard the entire season long was how few shots down the field this team was taking. Mm-hmm. Right, and whereas the Patriots took a few, they were really unsuccessful. You see, when you've got the right guy triggering it, and you've got everybody operating on the same page of the playbook, in sync. I mean, they were just carving up Seattle with those quick outs. And the same kind of thing, you're trying to get the ball in Marquise Lee's hands and let him then use his athleticism on somebody else, much like the Patriots did with Edelman and Amendola. Get the ball in their hands quickly and just a little bit of space where it's tough to stop that completion from happening. And they just kind of walked their way downfield doing that. Now, obviously, they took the shot over the top to Gronk, and that was successful for a touchdown. But they weren't Seattle was throwing it deep a lot. New England was kind of dinking and dunking their way down the field and ended up with Brady throwing four touchdowns.
It was fascinating because you always, like in the first quarter of a Super Bowl, you're always fascinated to see, okay, what do they throw out there now that they've had 2 weeks to prepare? First play of the game, New England comes out. Gronk on one side, nearly on the end line, split out wide. Who the other tight end, same one on the other side.
Tim Wright.
Who went a mom? Who went?
Oh, that one. Okay.
Who went mom and Nui?
So that just how did they react to that? And then what they did, they did a ton of pick routes, just to get these, you know, like you said, quick throw, head upfield. So I thought it was a great plan by McDaniels, you know, 50 passes. I mean, and they won the game.
Right, which you wouldn't have necessarily expected, you know, based on the track record this year, teams having success against Seattle. Running it right at them was more the route that teams took. And, you know, New England did what they did. I mean, we said it, and it's been said around football for a long time now, started with the West Coast offense. And it's just an extension of your running game in a lot of ways, you know. And those guys are, you
especially Vereen. He had 11 catches.
Vereen is a running back / wide receiver, and they split him out like a wide receiver a lot too. But, I mean, Amendola and Edelman, they're not built necessarily as thickly as your stereotypical running back, but I think they run more like running backs than they do wide receivers.
No, they do. The ball in their hands. And look, New England, it's a little unfair to compare Jacksonville to New England, given that New England knows exactly what they want to do. They know what their identity is. They knew what their game plan was going in to that game against Seattle, what they were going to be given and what they could do with that. It never felt like in the last 2 years Jacksonville had a real solid idea of even going into a game, this is what we do really well, so this is what we're going to do. This is what they're going to give us, so we're going to take advantage of that. It never felt in the last 2 years like they had that kind of thing. And I think that is in part about how great Tom Brady is and how flexible he is and everything that the Patriots can do on the offensive side of the ball, while the Jaguars are down here still trying to figure out, well, what do we do? What do we do well? What do we do that we can take advantage of what these defenses are doing? There's never been a rhythm to what they want to do down here in Jacksonville.
And I think, too, if you're winning, I don't think anybody ultimately cares that much. If you're winning, you know, with a defense that's so dominant and you're winning a bunch of 10-7 type football games, people can get behind that. But when you're not winning for an extended period of time, people are like, at least pretend like you're trying. You know, if you're going to lose this way, we'd rather you lose this way and give it a shot. We don't want you to lose, period. But at least do it by being aggressive, throwing the ball down the field. And I think that's what people get tired of, is a perception of conservative offense.
Sure.
You know.
But what are they on offense besides bad?
Right now?
Yeah.
They don't really. I mean, to me, what they should be is should be a team that takes advantage of Blake Bortles' ability to move the pocket and keep his eyes down the field. Because that to me is a great strength of Russell Wilson's, but what you have to be able to do is run the football.
Yeah.
Right? To truly make that happen, you have to make teams respect play action and freeze the defense for that split second. But I think they're a team that should take advantage of what Blake brings to the table and his strength right now. I'm not saying you should run him on the read option 15 times a game, but mix in a few of those. I thought he was so effective running that last year when they sprinkled it in.
Run it until the defense is going to respect, you know, take it away.
Right, because he's not taking big hits. I mean, he has run to open space. He's done a good job identifying when to keep and when to let it go to the tailback in those situations.
And even on those sacks, the only hit that you really remember is the one he took against Tennessee on the sack. Everything else, he did a nice job of just sort of twisting away and avoiding the big shot.
All right, before we let you get out of here, final thoughts, anything? What are you looking to hear today from any of these guys that we haven't discussed so far?
Well, these are always interesting because somebody's going to ask, what's your identity? They don't know yet. Yeah, so I want to get, you know, what do they think about, you know, with Greg Olsen? What do you think about Blake? You know, some of the guys that are here 2 years ago, Doug Marrone, you know, outside of the mechanics of why you're here, what can you bring scheme wise that worked in New Orleans with your old line? So,
I think one of the big themes, and I think they'll all get it to some degree, or those two main guys will get it, will be, you know, Gus Bradley saying we want to be a zone blocking running attack, right? Is that you come in saying, okay, that's what we've agreed on doing, or do you look at your personnel and you say, you know what, maybe that's not the best fit, or whether
mix
it's
it
the,
up now.
Right, for the linemen or the backs or what have you, and we'll look forward to catching up with those guys. We'll hear from Gus Bradley about 20 minutes from now. Ryan O'Halloran on his way down the hall looking for the latest scoop on Justin Blackman. We'll see you later, man. There he goes.
Thank you.
Northern Florida Times Union. I think he's glad to go with a belly full of pepperoni pizza for breakfast and be done with the Blackman conversation for another week. There you go. I think
maybe coming back in about a half hour.
All right. Well, we'll see you then. We won't be here, but
I think it may come up.
Oh, you think it may come up? Yeah, it probably will, but won't be for our listeners' pleasure. Likely, if your reaction to it anyway. 641-1010. If you want to get in today's fan feedback spotlight, asking you if you had a chance to sit down with Greg Olson, ask him one burning question. What's the most pertinent question for you, from a Jaguar fan's perspective, that you'd like to ask the new offensive coordinator? Clear, he's already stated the development of Blake Bortles is the most critical thing to the future of this franchise. We've all known that since the moment they selected Blake Bortles. And ultimately, the Caldwell-Bradley tenure will be judged in large measure on how he performs. I mean, you look at Belichick and Brady. Was Belichick the smartest, greatest coach in National Football League history until they stumbled upon Tom Brady in the sixth round, and until Mo Lewis practically decapitated Drew Bledsoe, hit him in the chest, knocked him out, and forced them to play Tom Brady, all of a sudden Bill Belichick became a genius, and those two are linked forever in history. Robert Kraft says, not even close, what the best coach-quarterback combination is in league history. Of course, Tony, I know you saw the comments from Charles Haley today, five-time Super Bowl winner and new inductee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I guess, what would he be, an inductee in waiting? I don't know how that would be. He hasn't been inducted yet, but he's been voted in to the Hall of Fame. He'll be in the upcoming class. He says Brady's entire legacy now is tainted, in his opinion. And you'd be surprised. There are a lot of guys that don't want to go on the record because it sounds like sour grapes. A lot, there's just that whole thing about calling out other players in the National Football League. Look, Garrett Blunt is going to soak it up during the parade yesterday, wear a biatch mode shirt, or at least parade around with one, and then the very next day, oh, no. 100% respect for Marshawn Lynch. Didn't mean any disrespect by my very disrespectful act whatsoever. So you're not going to see active players too often go this route, but Charles Haley's long been retired, and Charles Haley doesn't give a blank, okay?
Now he's in. They're not taking it away from him.
There's that, and he's always apparently been a kind of guy that if you don't like my personality, you're the one who's going to have to change because
right.
I'm not going to do it. And he says now the entire career of Tom Brady, he says that you can't even you don't question Joe Montana when it comes to that thing. He says it's not even close in his opinion. I don't know how widespread that is, but I'd love to have that lie detector because I do think there are more guys than you think out there that think that way about the Patriots in general. And you know what? If I'm a Patriot fan, I wouldn't give a rip. But it's certainly an interesting perspective that some of these guys have on that franchise and what they feel like they've been able to get away with in the Belichick era. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, look at some of your responses in the fan feedback spotlight. You'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up about 15 minutes away right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Ryan O'Halloran has not left the building, but he's left the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Glad you're along. Jaguars today on this Thursday, restating a little bit of Jaguar-ish news from earlier today. We talked about Frank Selfo, now the former quarterbacks coach for Blake Bortles this past season, but said to have a good rapport with Blake. He has been named a senior offensive assistant with, I suppose, job duties to be determined or at least revealed at a later time. And Todd Wash as well, Tony, has, in addition to coaching the defensive line, added the title of run game coordinator, which is very interesting because now you've got a guy who is going to be working directly with a position group on one side of the football and is coordinating an aspect of the other side of the football. Now, you would think as a defensive line coach, you know what gives you problems in the running game,
sure,
right? And that's what every good coach should do. Say, what is it tough for us to deal with? How can we incorporate some of those things into our attack? Because I know no matter what your personnel is, it's going to be tough to deal with X. Or depending on your personnel, it may be tough to deal with Y. So it does make some logical sense. We're getting quite the variety now of specialization on this coaching staff, right? I mean, you got Todd Wash, who by all accounts does a terrific job. And that unit last year, I don't think anybody felt was lacking in much, maybe with the exception of that one pass rusher that teams have to game plan for on a week in, week out basis. So just some reshuffling of the responsibilities for Frank Sofo and Todd Wash with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships presents the fan feedback question of the day. We asked you this. If you could ask one direct question of the new offensive coordinator, Greg Olson, what would it be? Tony, on Twitter, what did we get?
Here's what we got from Devin. Name the position on offense where an upgrade is most needed. From at Irish Jaguar, have you noticed how tall Mercedes Lewis is?
I think he's saying, let's throw him some jump balls in the red zone.
Maybe. From Josh, we got, will he utilize Gerhardt correctly? Hashtag no sweep runs with him. Pound the line.
I think that's a very fair question.
From Brian, what's the worst city you've coached in, and why is it St. Louis?
See, now how can St. Louis? Now, I guess I haven't spent enough time in St. Louis to know, but that's going to top Oakland as the worst city you've coached in?
And Detroit.
Holy.
He's been around, baby.
Holy smokes. I mean, Jacksonville's paradise compared to all these places.
You are correct. From Eric, we got, I would ask him if there's any validity to the degree of hate O'Halloran has displayed towards Justin Blackman.
Right. In other words, do you agree? Do you also hate Justin Blackman?
From Duke, how will he help Blake reduce turnovers? And from Hadari, Shotcom mentioned the need to be more creative. How do you plan on giving what the owner expects as the new offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I, honestly, if in fact everything goes according to plan, Gus is going to introduce these guys, and they're going to speak, and they're not going to speak, it's my understanding, like at a podium setting. So maybe Jaguars.com will run some of that stuff live as well as someone's doing, you know, a shoulder cam, whatever, and they're just feeding it live to the website. Certainly, you can listen in and watch Gus Bradley at Jaguars.com, and our audio comes courtesy of our friends here in the organization on that score. But then they're going to have Greg Olson talk to the radio and TV guys in one group, and then they'll slide him over to the writers. And as he goes to the writers, they'll bring in Doug Marrone, and he'll talk with the broadcast guys, and then he'll slide over to the writers, and then they'll do that down the line with Nathaniel Hackett and Kelly Skipper. But whenever Greg Olson's done, we're going to walk back to the studio and hopefully get an opportunity to interview him one-on-one if things go according to plan. I'm going to ask him, look, this is probably when the most frequently asked question I've had about Greg Olson is that Jags had the 32nd ranked offense, and the coordinator got fired. Or, I'm sorry, the 31st ranked offense. Coordinator got fired. You ran the 32nd ranked offense, and they hired you. How does that compute? Right now, Gus Bradley's at the podium. We're going to send you down the line. That does it today for Jaguars Today. Thanks to Ryan O'Halloran, and thanks to all of our great sponsors. Coming up, XL Primetime on the other side of Gus, but here's your head coach on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
First of all, I want to thank Shad, obviously, been a big part of this, allowing us. I think in conversations with Dave and Shad in the beginning, it was like, okay, now we're in this situation. Let's really compete. Let's really do everything we can to find out about as many people as we can, interview as many people, and find out what's available and how, you know, we can better this organization. So I really appreciate all the effort Shad had, as well as Dave. Very similar to how we did in the beginning, where I think that I told you when putting together staff, Dave was involved. I think, you know, we're transparent. We visit a lot. I mean, obviously not maybe as much about scheme, but in people. And so I also appreciate what Dave was throughout this whole process. But I felt like a couple things. One, I really liked our current staff. I really did. You know, the guys that the Ron Middletons, the Jerry Sullivans, you know, the guys that are on the offensive staff. We wanted to hire developmental coaches in the first place, and we did that. So I took this opportunity as we put this together as a way to strengthen our staff and even bring more experience to our staff. So that's kind of how we went about it. You know, so as we try to utilize the talents, best utilize everybody's talents in putting this whole thing together. I want to take some time just to talk. We did have some guys, current staff members with new titles. Frank Selfo is going to be the senior offensive assistant. It's kind of a position in the in the NFL, you're seeing it, where you take a guy that's had a wealth of experience and you utilize his traits to kind of watch the whole offense and bring new ideas. So although he's not quarterback coach anymore, he's a guy that's going to be involved with game planning. Some of his title or roles will be to look almost a week ahead and keep us, you know, so when we start the process on Monday, he's already had a great insight on the next team that we're playing. Be heavily involved in offense, with developmental part of our younger players. And, you know, just overall, he'll have a variety of things. I think one of the things we did with Frank last year, we brought him in the defensive meetings when we could. It really helped our defensive backs to have that kind of an insight from a quarterback's coach. So, you know, we'll utilize his strengths in multiple ways. So you're seeing some teams go to a senior offensive assistant. There's five or six teams that are kind of going in this role and felt like this would be a great role for him. And our D-line coach, Todd Wash. Todd has done a great job for us the last couple of years, and I've known Todd for a long time. He really we gave him the additional title of run game coordinator. He's really been doing this for the last 2 years, as well as the pass rush game, involved in some of the third down, some ideas there. But I know Bob has really relied on him, you know, for the run game, you know, the defensive game plan for that. So something he's done the last couple of years, we just chose to give him a title because of that. Some of the new additions, Greg Olson. Greg and I have had known each other for quite a while. You know, I think the first time, I know that's maybe a question, what happened the first time, Gus, when you do it? I think, you know, when I was in the interview process for a head coaching job, Jed and I also had a relationship, worked together earlier in Seattle with Jed, and I think that my mind was pretty much set that if I got a head job that he would be the offensive coordinator. And when Jacksonville, when Ole was here, you know, pretty much had my mind made up. But still maintained a close relationship with Ole, followed him from afar, had built some time with him in Tampa, played against Tampa when he was the offensive coordinator. And, you know, one of the things I think about Ole, when you talk around people in the league and you watch his film, a very good offensive mindset. And I think the other thing is he's really a developmental coach. And he's done that with the quarterbacks, Drew Brees, John Kitna, you know, guys with Derek Carr. A lot of conversations with current players, current coaches around the league, trying to get as much insight, and just felt strongly that, you know, with him in that role as an offensive coordinator, be a good fit for us. So, and then Doug Marrone. Doug, how that started off, I think it first started off where he came in and we were just kind of, he was still up for some head coaching opportunities, and it started off just talking about philosophy. And we developed a relationship at the owners' meetings, so I think he's still looking at Denver and Chicago as a possibility. He came down, we flew, and we just had kind of extended conversation. And we found out that in many ways we're similar. I really found out more about him as a coach. He had expressed interest as it went on about getting back to coaching guys with their hands in the ground, you know, back in the coaching offensive line. And I think as it developed, you know, as for me, I really gravitated towards him. I thought the wealth of experience he would bring. It was kind of, let's wait and see what happens with these other head coaching opportunities. But felt like if it didn't work out, strong possibility we could get him in as an offensive line coach. So I really enjoyed him. I did not know much about him now. And we had multiple conversations, a couple days, interviewed for a day, I believe, and then brought him back for another day and a half. And I just really enjoyed it. I felt a strong sense of humility. And I think that when you have that, possess that, that's really one of the biggest traits we're looking for in our coaching staff, is to have that so we can challenge one another, so we can continue to grow. So just really pleased about him. As far as assistant head coach on the offensive side, you know, I think it's great for me. He's been a head coach for many years, college and in the NFL. And someone that I can draw from his experiences. So I think if you look at his past offensive coordinator experience, has done a tremendous job developing offensive linemen. Tremendous job. And that was something that really intrigued us about him. Nathaniel Hackett, another guy that we interviewed and came away very impressed with. And what I saw as we were starting interviewing these guys, I was trying to put it together to say, we've really got a current staff on the offensive side, really good developmental coaches. And in interviewing these other guys, it kind of came together. I said, you know what? We've got Ole, who's been an offensive coordinator. Doug Marone's been an offensive coordinator. Here's Nathaniel Hackett, who's been an offensive coordinator. And the challenge was, okay, that experience, that wisdom that they could bring to mesh with our other coaches could be a really good thing. There's a theory, though, right? One bad general is better than three good generals. And I think for me, that's what I had to take some time, was to say, okay, with these guys, this experience that they've had, the ideas that they bring, could we mesh everybody together and form a really, really strong group of coaches? And as I was going through the process, it started to come together. It started to come together real well. And Nathaniel did a really good job, studied the Buffalo film, really liked what they did offensively, talked to players on his behalf, coaches on his behalf, no ego. I just felt like for him in the quarterback position, just does a really good job developing guys, did a good job at Syracuse with Nassib, and I think he's just a good addition for us. Kelly Skipper was one that Greg Olson felt really comfortable with, he felt like he could bring along from Oakland that would help with the scheme. And got a chance. I had to make a quick decision on him. Made quick phone calls, talked to a lot of people, players that played for him, coaches that have worked with them. Felt really good in my conversations with that.